So we are talking today about the many opportunities that the retail and hospitality technologies bring into the market, and we are going to be exploring some of them. And I'm here today with my colleagues, Gordon and Richard. Welcome. Thank you for being here with me.
Good to be here.
And one of the things that has caught my attention this morning is that you are not talking anymore about the high street. You are talking about the experience street. How comes?
Well, I think for me, a lot of the high streets we have are changing dramatically, because if you pick on my own local high street, it's about 150 years old. There's different types of buildings all the way down. Some are large, some are small. And you've now got the emergence of retail parks, which are larger, more dedicated areas. Because when you look at my local high street, it was designed when there were very few cars on the roads, more horses and carts, and very few buses. Whereas now, everybody has a car, we like to drive, we like to get on the bus or something like that. And the high street that's in the center of town, that's always been there, is not as easy as to drive to. There's no parking. The bus routes are slightly different sometimes. And for retail parks, they tend to be out of town, easier to get to, much better locations. So for me, the high street is evolving and changing. So more from a high street to an experience street is what I see. So a mix of retail and hospitality mixing.
I think also that's key. It's not just the location of it that's creating the experience. It's also the combination of it being not just retail. It's not just shopping there. I mean, for quite a while now, we've started to see cinemas appearing on the top level of shopping centres, which is great, because I can go hide in the cinema and watch a film while the family goes shopping. I mean, I've even heard I've not been to it yet, but there's a shopping centre in London where they've actually built on one of the levels. They've built a go-kart circuit in the shopping centre. It sounds like something out of that Coconut Mall on one of the Mario Kart games. Yeah. It's so I think it's that additional, leisure hospitality beyond just retail that's helping to bring people into these shopping locations, whether it's an out-of-town retail park or whether it's the high street itself, I think.
Definitely. I think for me, the mix of retail and hospitality as well, we want to do a bit of shopping, we want lunch, we want a break, we want choices. So for me, it's opening up all those different things. And for me, the high streets we have of old are potentially not the what do we want of the future. So it's about adapting those, changing those, maybe changing some of them over to just outlets where you go in, you view clothes, but you still buy them online or something like that, showrooming. I can never say that word, showrooming. But that opportunity of more mixed retail and hospitality in one location. Because like you say, we're looking for experiences in life, whether that be experiences shopping, experience hospitality, fun, something fun. If it's all in one location, much, much easier for the family.
So in the past, people was really going shopping or having fun. But nowadays, it's like people goes for fun and then at the same time, they are going shopping, right?
So I think the 1970s and 80s were so dull that actually an afternoon shopping was considered entertainment enough. Whereas now people have got much higher expectations these days. So they want a cinema, they want somewhere to eat, they want a choice of restaurants, they want to go go-karting while they're shopping. There's a lot. I think retail has to deliver more of an experience these days to actually get people interested enough, because just going to the shops is not exciting enough by itself.
No, and this is with a lot of retailers, they struggle to find the space they require within a normal high street. Because before, when you had a butcher's, a baker, a candlestick maker, the retail shops weren't as big, as spacious, as tall, as needed in today's world. And I think that's what retail parks gives you, the opportunity to have sometimes larger spaces where you can put more into it, have different departments within that. So, for me, retail parks are a change to the high street. It's picking up the high street and just moving it somewhere else. But then looking at the high street and go, right, now what can we do with the high street? Is there smaller shops we can have in there? So not everybody can have their big stores. Can we mix a couple of shops up? So you have a cafe and an art gallery, for instance, looking at those retail outlets and the hospitality things and going, where will they work well together?
Yeah, so what you mean is that now the people could be having that experience in the city centre rather than only outside the city centre, as has been traditionally been seen.
Yeah, I mean, Richard said a key thing there. You know, you go in as a family to do some shopping on a Saturday or something on a Saturday, and yeah, you may have, right, we're all going to a family for this shop first because we all need to be in this together, and then the kids can go off to that, we can go off to that, and it's all roughly in the same area, so you can trust your kids aren't, you know, going halfway across town without you or anything like that. You know, you can all regroup quickly and easy for lunch. You know, you can have different experiences within the same place.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. No, but I mean, in the meantime, we are also seeing that the shops are also getting smaller. You know, there was a time, you remember when we were kids, that all the shops were in the city center, and then all these massive malls start to appear, you know, in the 70s, in the 80s, you know, and then we were all starting to get outside the center to look for something else, probably fun, probably a different kind of experience, and that's absolutely the truth. But in the last years, we are also seeing that the big change are not that much interested in making big shops, big malls, but they're also coming back to the center. They want to be closer. They want to make the experience different for the customers. So I think this is also a good opportunity, but also represents a trouble, because the smaller you make the shops and the more downtown they are, of course, the logistical solution is much more complicated, right?
So yes, but then you've got to take on the modern way of retailing, you know. So yes, you can go into a shop, you can try something on, you can look at the alternatives, look at the accessories. Do you really need to walk out the shop with it there and then, or could you just have it delivered the next day? You know, that's again for me a growing theme is come in, experience the brand, try the things on, have it delivered next day. So, yeah, it's changing times for sure.
I think if you look at convenience retail, that's a really good example of the point that Paco made there. Shops are getting smaller and they're getting more local. So I think, and in terms of convenience stores, convenience retail has to become more convenient for people. It's, you know, you don't always want to go to the big out-of-town supermarket. You don't want to go to, whether it's Tesco or Carrefour or whatever the local soup, you know, whatever the big out-of-town supermarket is. Sometimes you just want a handful of things. You want 10 items or less. And I think with that convenience that you get with the smaller stores, okay, there's less choice. Possibly it's even slightly more expensive to shop there. But also, you can put different sort of products in there as well. It doesn't have to be just groceries. You can also add some, you know, some local, whether it's food or non-food items to that as well. So I think it's about, you know, providing, although perhaps a more limited choice, because you can't have everything in a store that's a tenth of the size of a full size hypermarket. But you can. As long as it's about getting it right. It's about understanding what the customers in that area need, getting the data right, and putting the right stuff on the shelves there.
That's it. Looking at your essentials, I suppose. You know, what are people going to run out the most of? You know, if like you say, if you filled it up with, you know, something that you only use once a year, you're not going to sell too much. But if it's that regular bread and butter, you know, your bread, your milk, your potatoes, that type of things, then yeah. More people are looking for that convenience, because it's always the way. You're in the middle of, you know, just about to start cooking. You go down to the kitchen. Oh, I forgot to get this. I forgot to get that. And like you say, what is the convenience of getting in your car, going all the way to the supermarket, parking outside, walking in, as opposed to getting on your bike, maybe running down the street quickly, grabbing it and coming back? It's convenience.
Or getting it delivered. I mean, you know, if the local convenience store is close enough, then you know, maybe they can do the running for them. Maybe I think especially in bigger cities, the last mile delivery is down to grocery deliveries within half an hour. So you don't even have to leave your house. You might be cooking dinner and you realize that you're out of, I don't know, pepper or curry powder or whatever it is. And you know, you can quickly jump online. Okay, you'll pay for the delivery to get it there. But if you want to carry on doing what you're doing, you want to carry on entertaining your friends, still cook the meal with the correct ingredients, then there's that aspect of it as well. It's not for everybody, but it's another aspect of if the shop is close enough and convenient enough, then you can get access to that sort of service.
Definitely. And, you know, like you say, if you're ordering food from 1 mile away, why can't you order some convenience food from the shop that's 1 mile away? It's, you know, it's still a person going to collect something and bringing it to you regardless of what it is. And for me, yeah, I can see retail going that way a lot more, you know, because I go to, you know, a large retail chain, I go online, I purchase it, it arrives next day. Why can't it come from the shop just down the road, have it delivered by a driver within 15 minutes, just like my takeaway?
Well, that's...
I'll tell you why, Gordon, because my kids can't be bothered to go to the shops for me to fetch this stuff. That's why.
That's a good reason.
Well, that's it. You know, in our day, Richard, we were sent down to the shops, wouldn't we, to get the milk and things like that.
Be grateful of the opportunity.
We will be talking about that. I think probably it's a generational question, right? It's a fact that we are shopping in a different way today as 20 years ago ourselves, but also that our kids are shopping in a completely different way, totally different way, probably. Probably the trends, the patterns are might be the same, but still the way that is the purchase is finalized is completely different. And also how the information is searched. And I'm wondering one thing here, guys. It's like, do we, or do you think that the retailers are assuming this change? Because, of course, the big names, the Marks and Spencers of this world, they are studying, they know the data, they really keep behind the consumer and try to make this experience better. But you mentioned the grocery shops. Do you think that the grocery shop in the corner of this high or experienced street is ready to do that?
For me, I think it's certainly coming. You know, if you picked on Marks and Spencers there, and they've recently launched some new products, new ways of paying, new ways of collecting that they've never had before. So you can physically go in, scan something on your phone, pay for it on your phone, and just walk straight out. So you don't have to go to a cashier anymore. And for somebody like Marks and Spencers to take that on board is a big change. And like you say, for me, the opportunities are out there at the moment are broad in how many opportunities there are to purchase something, whether it be click and collect, buy online in store, just go in and buy it, you know, pay with cash, pay with a phone, pay with a card. There's so many different opportunities, and we are right in the middle of change.
Yeah, definitely. And I think yes, there's new technology required to meet this change, but it exists already. I mean, it exists for the... I think it's probably easier for the bigger retailers to integrate, or it's more affordable for the bigger retailers because they can do it on a scale. But I think something that's been driven over the last couple of years, in particular with the restrictions imposed, particularly during the pandemic, I think that's definitely driven the requirement for smaller retailers to actually have access to the technology that allows them to you know, whether it's click and collect, buy online, pick up in store, buy online, what's it, BOPIS and BOPAC, the buy online, pick up at curbside, I think it is the other one. So you don't even have to go into the store to pick it up. That technology is available now, and especially convenience retailers, but also, you know, across retail, that technology is there, it's affordable, and it's being implemented now, actually using products that, you know, products technology that Blue Star sells, it's going into those stores right now. So
and this is it, with the advancement of Android and iOS into retail and hospitality, it's a lot of things are just an app away for small to medium businesses. For instance, you know, it's gone are the days where you had to implement a great big scheme and, you know, it was a year's project and so on and so forth. Nowadays you can literally just sign up to some apps, download your apps onto your device and get working. So I think, like you say, opportunities are there for everybody, and even into self-service. You know, we all see the big large supermarkets with self-service, it doesn't have to be the whole shebang that they've got. It can just be a screen, a scanner, and a payment device. You know, break it down to the basics. And, you know, I think a lot of people have proven that over time. If, you know, especially in hospitality, if you give the customer the screen to order themselves, they might be a bit more forward going with their orders. You know, yes, I do want the larger order. Yes, I do want the chocolate cake. It's giving the opportunities and chances there.
Sorry, go ahead. Okay.
No, please go on.
I was going to say, I think what it also does is it allows them to cope with the rise and fall in demand during the day. So, you know, for example, a takeaway shop, fish and chip shop, or a kebab shop, or whatever, the having an ordering point there actually means that they're going to get really busy, let's say between 5 and 7 in the evening when everybody goes in and they want to buy food. and that creates frustration because people don't want to queue for ages. Also, I think people are still quite fearful of queuing. They don't want to sit, you know, they don't want to be standing together with a lot of other people. But a means of taking their order in advance allows them to plan the, you know, what do we need? What are we going to need to deliver in 10, 15 minutes to our customers? That's huge. And I think if you combine that with mobile ordering apps that they can do, whether that's through something like Deliveroo or Uber Eats or any of the apps that are out there, there's a huge plethora of apps available to be able to order in advance. I think it's putting all those technologies together and just, you know, just basically making it much more convenient for people.
Yeah, because you mentioned that you know, this behavior can be different depending on the time during the day. But let's face it, I think there is a bigger challenge in trying to adapt to the different kinds of customers you have in your shop. Because again, not everyone is a young person used to, let's say, look for the information. Not everyone is an old person who doesn't know anything about technology. So you probably need to combine those things in order to make sure that every customer has got the right experience when they go to your shop, right?
Yeah, and this is it. For me, there's so much change at the moment, so much variety. Like you say, 12 till 2, 5 till 7, you know, 4 hours of the day that you want extra cover for, but trying to get a member of staff to come in to work 2 hours is a little bit hard sometimes. But the self-service is sitting there, you know, 24 hours a day waiting to take orders. And I think just at those key times makes a big, big difference.
I'll tell you one thing that really, I know, really drove that self-checkout need, whether it's self-checkout or self-ordering. It was, I think, as things started to open up again after the pandemic and holiday destinations suddenly got very, very busy. And there were outlets, whether it was, you know, particularly food places, where they couldn't cope with the amount of demand. So I saw a lot of activity, a lot of people very, very interested in self-service and self-checkout leading up to, I think they got through the first opening of summer at the beginning of summer last year, and then start, you know, for the as it got busier into full summer, there was a lot of people looking for that. And I think that's something that will definitely continue.
Well, again, that's been a big change over the whole COVID pandemic thing. You know, there was one point, I think it was 2020, there was 2,500 restaurants a week going online that had never been online before. So if you imagine a normal restaurant...
How many, you said?
2,500 a week across Europe. Because there's that many restaurants that weren't online before.
I was not aware of that.
They'd always thought about it, looked at it, but the second it hit and they all had to shut and the place was locked down, they've got no income. So what do? I can get income for going online. So again, they've now then opened up last year and said, right, we've opened up a revenue stream via the internet, no problem at all. Again, Richard's highlighting there where they came back to reopen after the, you know, during the pandemic, and they've got all these online orders, all these customers turning up. So again, the kitchen is now overloaded slightly more because they've got so much more business. And this is the change that, you know, a lot of people are facing. It's not just, you know, what you think it would be. It's other areas growing.
Okay, so we are talking about the different behavior depending on the generation you belong to. And this is, of course, you don't want to feel too old, but it's true that our kids are shopping and having a completely different experience than the one we have. To be honest, I'm really sick and tired of talking about these generations X, Y, Z. You know, you mentioned this morning we are boomers, you know. So I don't even know.
No, Paco, I said you're a boomer.
Yeah, okay. With all my respects, yeah. And, you know, I think I really feel much more like a big question mark rather than a letter anymore. But I think this generation is, especially if I go to the standards, I go back to the standards, the generation Z, which is all those... All the people that has been born between 1995 and 2010, you know, they are now reaching the employment, and now they are reaching, you know, a standard of purchase, which is, of course, bringing new needs and new wants, you know. And most of the shops are seeing this, but as I said at the beginning, most probably the shops need still to combine that with the fact that our people and even our parents are still customers of those shops.
Yeah, like you say, for me, that whole generation that's growing up there, they're the generation that have had a mobile phone slapped in their hand or some sort of device in their hands since birth, a lot of them. And for me, they're used to having that technology, used to having that power in their hands. And for me, you know, if you just take straight payments, you know, my daughter at 18 does not carry a card anymore. Everything is on the phone and the phone goes everywhere. Whereas I'm still carrying a wallet with cards in, no cash anymore, but cards in. So it all depends what you're looking for. But yeah, they are a growing generation. And for me, having that computing power in your pocket allows you to do so much. And why wouldn't you in going forward? You know, for me, it's just a training and a testing thing, because a lot of people, once they've tested something, will go, oh, okay, that wasn't as bad as I thought. I didn't think it was going to be, you know, I thought it was going to be way more complicated. It was really easy. But it's just taking that step to go, let me try it. Let me, you know, download an app and try something different today. Why not? You know, whereas that generation, they're already on it and already going, yeah, here's my phone. What do I do with it? Where's my app? You know, it's commonplace in their world, where it's, you know, I grew up in a generation where don't touch the computer in case you break it. Where nowadays it's ridiculously hard to break a computer, so try and break it. You know, and it's that different generations that have done different things. But yeah, for me, the amount of technology they have in their phones, in their pockets nowadays is unbelievable.
Yeah, I think, you know, mobile and payments are definitely the technology that Generation Z, if that's what we're going to call them. I don't know what comes next after Generation Z, by the way. I think we've literally run out of letters of the alphabet.
Generation A.
Back to the start, yeah.
Well, we can always refer to them as the next generation, you know? So.
Yeah, like Star Trek, yeah. I share my phone account, my Apple account is shared with my son who's at university, and every week there's a new payment app springs up on my phone that I don't know, usually something related to a pub's payment app, but yeah,
I wonder why.
Yeah, it's definitely that's definitely happening. I think, but alongside that, you know, he's eating in the same restaurants, he's drinking in the same pubs as people from different generations, I think, in some cases, and those people are going to want to go in there, and they're going to want to pay cash as well. So it goes back to what we were saying before about this technology has to sit alongside it, either has to integrate or at least sit comfortably next to the ability to take cash payments as well.
Yeah, because we are still in that middle of change, aren't we? You know, we haven't changed enough for everybody to be accepting it and doing it. You know, if we just take a food ordering when you go into a restaurant at the table, you know, so you can download an app, order your food, pay for it on your phone, and that's it. You don't actually have to speak to anybody or have any, you know, any conversations with anybody. Food just and drink just arrives, which is great in some aspects, but also slightly different in some others, because I think we're kind of missing out on some of that interaction between, you know, what are the specials? What's this? What does that taste like? Have you seen this? But then we are adding in other things of, you know, we've all been in the pub, for instance. We're all sitting at a table having a good conversation, finish our drinks. Somebody has to leave the conversation and go get more drinks. Whereas now you just on the phone, more drinks arrive.
In fact, it becomes an experience for the whole group in that case.
Well, I must admit, it was, an experience with my parents, my daughter the other day, where we went to a Wetherspoons, and a lot of things are done on ordering on your app. And, you know, my daughter started off, this is what I want. It came around to me, this is what I want. I passed it to my father. What do I want that for? what are you doing? Well, you're going to do your order off of here. Where's the waitress? What's going on? And I said, no, look, you just have a look for you. What do you want? And sort of, oh, okay. And he was so amazed that you're on your phone, you're ordering your food, and it arrives. Yeah. Well, you didn't have to talk to anybody. You know, it was just the sheer amazement that, is this real?
Yeah, but okay, this is new for your father. But I think this is also related to what Gordon said this morning, you know, is the difference between the wants and the needs, you know? And it's like, what do you need to place your order? Well, yeah, you just need this and that. But what do you want? Do you really want 100%? Do you want to be 100% isolated in a bar in the corner, just ordering your food without any interaction with the waiter? Probably. This is something that did not happen. You didn't have the chance to make the choice 20 years ago. Now you have the choice, which doesn't mean that anyone or everybody is going to be doing that.
I think choice is really key. And I think, you know, Gordon was making me think before that you don't have to leave the table, but in some cases you might want to leave the table just to have a 5-minute break at the bar away from the, you know, the people that you've gone with, that you might just want a, you know, a quiet moment away. And so you have to have different options for payment. And I think that's the beauty of things at the moment, is this can be done in different ways, and different people will prefer different ways. Also, the same person on different days in different situations might want a different way. If I happen to have £50 cash in my wallet for some reason, usually because one of my children has given it to me because they're not interested in cash. They're here, can I give you this £50 and you transfer it to me?
But that's the point. I mean, you have been mentioning also the word cash a few times, you know, and we I think the most extreme country in Europe is Finland. I think the cash is really rarely used, you know, in most of the cases. So do you think really cash is over?
I don't think it's over yet. I think, you know, it'll certainly still be around for quite some time. It's just its use cases are going down dramatically. You know, with the technology we've got now, you don't need cash. I mean, I played a game with my daughter and my wife a couple of years ago. Name somewhere where you must physically have cash, where there's nothing else will work apart from cash. And we played the game for a good year. You know, and unfortunately, there was nothing they could come up with where cash, you had to have cash, and there wasn't something already in place that could do the same thing. You know, even as far as shopping trolleys, you know, you have your pound or your euro that you put into the shopping trolley, well, they just give you a free plastic one, and you can use it again and again and again and again. Because how many times have we turned up at a shopping centre, you know, to get the week's groceries? We haven't got a euro, we haven't got a pound. What do? I have to go to the cash machine to get £10 out, to go to over here to get it changed into a pound. Whereas I just go up to the supermarket, go, sir, I haven't got a pound. Oh, there you go. Here's a token. Put the token in there. Move on.
That's absolutely great, because I mean, we have some of the top vendors which are specialized in the cash.
Oh, totally. And we're still
in the cash management, right?
So yeah, we're still selling cash drawers left, right, and center because people are still using cash today. Exactly. It's just choices, you know, and yes,
I think that's the right key.
As we progress forward, you know, if we look at, you know, cash has been around the last 10,000 years, whatever, when we didn't have the technology we had. Now we have the technology, things are changing, you know, so.
So at the end, having the right technology provides the right choice, and having the right choice, or at least the opportunity to have a choice, increases your experience. And I think that is at the end the key, right?
Definitely.
Yeah. I mean, you've seen those places now that are card only. For me, no, not yet. You know.
You mean for you personally?
If I was the retailer, I wouldn't be going card only just yet. You know,
there's a lot of places going that way, though. There's a lot of.
For me, as a standard retailer, I would still give the opportunity to take cash. I would expect it to be a lot less than historic years, but I'd never turn somebody away from taking cash. You know, a friend of mine who owned an electrical company came to me a few months back and goes, so taking card payments, how easy is it? Because again, his electricians were going out, doing some private work, getting paid cash. Coming back to, so they were covering the cash, they were then giving him the cash, he then had to get in his car, drive into town, pay parking, go to the bank, pay the bank to pay the money into the bank, because nobody does anything for free, and all of that had security problems and costs on its way, whereas nowadays, much more, take a payment, move on, you know. Again, a friend of mine who's a plumber, he historically will do the job, go back, write an invoice out, drop the invoice off when he's passing or post it, wait for the check to arrive, go into the bank and cash it. And it's just, I was just like, no, what are you doing? Just
sounds
turn
like
up,
the Far West.
Take a card payment, move on. All that work and all that hassle before, ignore it. Don't have it. It's not cost effective in today's world.
That's right. Absolutely. Anyway, we are going to be having a podcast, or making a podcast specifically about payments. So I think we will be going back to this subject very, very soon. But let me give you a couple of facts, you know, because we've been talking about those facts that you like, Gordon, for me.
I love Paco facts.
The fact is that, you know, in 2021, more than 8,500 stores closed in the UK in high streets, you know. Yes, it's true. We don't know how many new ones were open the year after, but I mean, is it like still the market is suffering from that kind of behavior, or is there really still a big market opportunity there?
I think what's happening is, yes, a lot of shops are closing down, the statistics on how many shops opened is we're not sure of that at this point, but I think it's pretty safe to assume that a lot of shops came in and filled that gap. Maybe not 8,500 new shops, but a lot of shops will have come in and filled that. I know one of those, yeah, to turn a statistic into something a little bit closer to home, I live in Hull in the UK, and one of the shops that closed down was House of Fraser, so a big department store. I guess it's probably a little bit like El Corte Inglés in Spain, and they closed down, and a company came in and they replaced a department store with, it's got a sort of high-end food supermarket in there. They've got coffee shops, they've got food places, they've got there's got a couple of bars, there's a record shop in there. On a weekend they have a stage outside the record shop. This is all inside, all indoors. They've got seating areas, they have a band on or a musician on. So, you know, taking something a department store, just really, you know, an area of retail that's really struggled over the last few years, it's struggled to compete, very much possibly a thing of the past, or at least definitely needing to reinvent itself, that's gone and it's been replaced by something that, like we were saying earlier, it's a lot more of an experience to go there. You can go, you can do a bit of shopping if you want to, but you can also eat out. You can be entertained while you're there. It's really, I think it's just, it's interesting to see how that change has replaced what was there. So the it's not a shop closes and it's not replaced by a pile of an empty lot with just rubble in it. Right. It's there's an actual, you know, a thriving business has sprung up in its place.
And I think for me, some brands are now looking at an experience shop or a showrooming place, if you know what I mean. So you can go in there, understand the brand. You know, for instance, Aston Martin, you can go in there. Yes, they may have a car that you can't purchase, but you could look at the car, understand the car, look at different things, have some screens in there that will tell you videos and stories about the brand, what they're doing, what their beliefs are, where their technology advances are. So you can go and experience brands more, not just go in, buy something, but go in and have an experience, understand that brand more at a local level. You know, you don't have to go to London or, you know, to the city,
the main city.
Yeah.
Close to your town.
Capital city. Yeah, sorry. 2 second pause. So rather than going to the capital city, for instance, to go to the one main place, they have little ones dotted around in more localized areas that I can go to and understand the brand as such. So experience
absolutely.
The brand.
Well, the fact is that, again, another fact for you, Gordon, and for you, Richard.
We both love Paco facts, Paco.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So another fact is that 81% of the shoppers, they have already expressed that they want to continue going to the shop. So and I see, for example, on my daughter, you know, she's 16, you know, and then she buys a lot online. She returns half of that, of course, mm-hmm. which is of course a choice that they have and we didn't have in the past. But still, she enjoys very much going shopping with her friends. So it seems to be a combination, you know. And again, there is a choice to do both things.
Like you say, the opportunity to send things back wasn't there 15 years ago. But now the opportunity is to buy online. It doesn't fit. I'll send it straight back. Me personally, being slightly, you know, a tall chap, shall we say, I'd still like to go into the retail shops and go, does this fit? Is it, you know, halfway down my arm? Is it going to, you know, meet my hands? You know, is it wrestling with my socks, or is it going to actually, you know, touch my shoes or such? And I'm still that belief of, yeah, for me personally with clothing, yeah, I want to go and try it on.
But this brings the thing of the omnichannel, you know, because this is exactly where the omnichannel plays a role. It's like you are buying in the shop, but you are searching for the information before going to the shop. And then even our generation, we are searching massively information, prices, choices, options, locations, everything. And we are looking for that. And then we might be ending up buying and purchasing in the shop. But we have been part of the digital area too, right?
Yeah, I think, this might be something that interests you, Gordon. I was reading the other day, there's actually a technology that's available that actually will, it's like a body scan. So you do a full body scan and it gets your exact measurements. you can then use that in your online profile when you're shopping with fashion retailers, so that you can actually, they know what size you are, so they know that you're, you know, a long in trousers and a, you know, a small in waist or something like that. So you can use that, and if you then combine that with what else the retailer knows about you, so what you've bought recently, what might fit you and complement that, what your taste in clothes are when you buy certain clothes. So there's some really cool technology out there that's actually going to help that. So you can do more research online. Then when you actually arrive at the shop, it's not a fruitless search for, oh no, you don't have these in my size. You know, with a good degree of certainty before you go in to make that final decision about whether you're going to buy it, you know that they've got something there that's going to fit you, that's going to go well with your new pair of brown trousers or whatever you've just bought recently. There's that data that the retailers potentially have about us as shoppers is really starting to come into its own.
Well, yeah, and I think for me, accepting that data or will it be willing to hand over that data is quite key for the future, because with the use of mobile phones now and my trading history and linking my transactions to what I've, you know, my purchases to my transactions, things like that, it gives that data the chance to build up and understand and work, you know, and give the retailers the chance to be able to help me more. And yeah, for me personally, I would be quite happy to accept over, you know, to pass hand over my own details about my size, my height, my purchasing details. If I'm happy, then here's my details. Help me more is the main thing here, isn't it? And those tools out there are going to help me in my purchases, speed them up, understand them, do they fit, you know, because like you say, if I'm always buying brown trousers, then, you know, what size are they? You know, is there a pattern here that's emerged? It's always a 36 long or something like that. Or, you know, depending on which brand, you know, I buy a 36 long in one brand, I buy a 36 regular in a different brand. And the app then looks at this and goes, okay, I understand what Gordon's things are. So, yeah.
The other thing to back up that statistic, Paco, is that there are certain things that you're quite happy buying online. So I'm very comfortable, as we were saying before, with online grocery shopping. I don't need to see the tin of beans before it arrives with me. I accept that it's probably going to be exactly what it says on the tin. Mm-hmm. But there are other things, like, for example, when I'm buying accessories for my guitar, I need to replace the strings every few months. I actually like going into the guitar shop because it's an excuse for me to play around with the whatever new guitars they've got in. It's a chance to chat to the people in there. I can talk to them. I can listen to what music they're playing in there, that sort of thing. For me, that's an experience. I'm always going to go into that shop. Also, I want to support a local retailer because I couldn't have, when I buy a guitar, I want to use it first. I want to see what it does. And that loyalty continues afterwards. I want to support them. So I think, I could easily buy, and I always buy the same guitar strings, I could easily buy them online, but I don't, because I want to spend an hour in the shop annoying the people that work there with my endless questions about guitars and guitar strings. So,
but that's the experience. Absolutely. You're looking for, isn't it?
Exactly,
you
know,
the experience you want.
That's it, it's the experience. We're talking also about the experience, but there is, and of course we are a technological company, you know, we are selling solutions for those shops. And I would like also to bring your attention into a fact. Sometimes I think
another
people
fact.
Is not... Another fact.
Another Paco fact.
No, this is not a fact. This is much more a reality, you know? And it's true that a lot of the times the technology is very advanced, very much customer-centric. But a lot of times we also see in our solutions, you know, in the solutions which we are providing to customers, that the partners are not looking to the employees of the shop. So I see this, for example, very clearly in healthcare. You know, in the healthcare business, it's obvious that, especially with the COVID, you know, the technology has been evolving enormously and fast. And but sometimes they don't really realize that, or they realize, but maybe they are not solving that situation accurately. That the users are going to be the doctors, the nurses, and of course, taking care of that fact is very important. In the shops, I have the feeling that it's a little bit different, and the people is also much more used to incorporate technology and to adopt this kind of technology. But still, it needs to be easy to be implemented, right?
Yeah, like you say, for me, the use of technology is key there. Whether it be connected to your customer, connected to your team member, connected to your management. You know, there's so many good uses of technology now, because one of my pet hates is you're going to buy a new product, you get into the retail store and you find out you're more knowledgeable than the sales assistant that's helping you. You know, for me, help him out, you know, connect him up, give him an app or give him a device where he can then get more information himself. So the power is then in his hands to go, okay, I've got a device here. Oh, they've just sent me more information about the latest Sony TV. Okay, I'll sit and watch this 2 minutes. Okay, I'll get that. So yeah,
the flip side of that is how impressive it is when you do actually encounter somebody, whether it's in retail or hospitality, who actually does know what they're talking about. Yes. You know, you go to a nice restaurant and you say, you know, my wife's gluten free, right? So if you go into a restaurant and you say, is this gluten free? And they're able to immediately say, well, it's not, but we can change this, this, and this, and then it is. Yeah. Then that knowledge that you get in a high end restaurant, I think you probably would get in a high end retailer. The technology to equip staff in any customer facing environment, whether it's a shop or a restaurant or a pub or whatever, technology exists. It's just whether people use it or not, and whether it's easy for them to use and it's accessible when they use it. So it's a good point.
Yeah, like you say, just having a device in a restaurant, gluten free, boom, there it goes, gives suggestions straight away, doesn't it? So again, having your connected server as such gives them the power in their hands to go, I understand you, customer. I can sympathize with you. I can give you options. Yeah.
Okay. So I think we have been touching a lot of topics today, and I think that's more than enough. And I think we have been sharing also some of our personal experience. How do we see the market? But also most of the knowledge that you have out of your conversation with partners, and especially listening to the partners' needs. And this is happening today. This is happening right now, and the opportunity is there. So what I would like to do to finish is just to take 3 points that you consider they are critical in the retail hospitality business today, from the point of view of how this means an opportunity for our customers. So I think maybe we should start by the operating system. You mentioned before that this is a critical change in this moment. There is a critical movement.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen, if you picked up, just for instance, the use of MPOS, so phones and tablets, huge growth in iOS and Android over Windows. And for me, the use of Android will give you dedicated manufactured items for the retail and hospitality environment. So Windows historically looked at a couple of bits, and yes, they've got touchscreen terminals, but not too many other devices. iOS, you're only going to get the iOS, you know, the Apple devices, the tablets and the phones. Whereas with Android, for instance, you've now got ranges of dedicated hardware being built with an Android operating system just for retail and hospitality. And that, for me, Android as an operating system is growing rapidly. Now, yes, there's a huge base in EPOS with Windows, but I see great advancements in Android, because your normal retailer who owns, say, two shops wants a touchscreen terminal and some software on there so they can do their processing. Yes. They don't really, not too fussed what operating system it is behind it, as long as it works, comes up with their software. So it could be Android, could be iOS, could be Windows. And with the...
They probably don't even know in some cases, do they? They certainly don't care.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So for me, Android bringing potentially lower cost in some cases and more dedicated hardware, you've got to be paying attention. You know, yes, there's lots of things out there for iOS, but for me, I think Android will have a huge growth going forward.
I definitely agree with that. I mean, we've seen that already over the last 5 to 7 years in mobile technology with the, you know, mobile computers that we sell. At the moment, we've only really seen the tip of the iceberg in terms of point of sale and front of house retail. So that's definitely going to happen. I think what's also going to drive that, you mentioned the cost of it, the hardware is simply cheaper with Android, and the convenience of being able to do that either as a POS static PC or as a mobile device. That Windows can't do that. Yes, it can do the POS itself, but it can't do the mobile element of it. And I think the other factor that is and will continue to drive Android forward is that's where the Generation Z that we were talking about before, they're coming through, they're developing for Android, for maybe also for iOS, not so much at all for Windows. So that's the I think those elements all coming together, that's what makes Android such an important movement at the moment.
And if we do link Androids to payment, for instance, then potentially, you know, a lot of the industry are saying that payment devices over the next 5 years will turn to Android devices.
I think this is probably the second key takeaway out of this conversation, is payments really means a massive opportunity.
There's so much change at the moment, so many new ways of paying, you know, again, even interest-free, you know, you purchase something and it qualifies for an interest-free payment scheme. Wow, where did that pop up from? Just pops up on your app. And, you know, these things are, you know, ways to pay are so different nowadays. And I think it's just, yeah, the payments industry is changing dramatically. And for me, it's a good thing because historically it was a little bit stagnant, shall we say. For me, opportunities are growing.
So I think payments is a massive opportunity, as we said, but traditionally most of the partners, they were always a little bit scared of moving into payments because, of course, the market seems to be a little bit more complicated, right? From the technology point of view, right? But I think now all this is much easier and the opportunities are there. So probably there is a moment nowadays to move into there, right?
You know what we need, Paco? We need a podcast just about payments.
You get it. All right. And I think the last comment that we have from today is about the momentum. And the momentum seems to be the right for the change, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes. For me, you know, I spoke to a few big retailers last year and I couldn't turn around and say, this is the one thing you need. It was always a case of, we're in the middle of the change. We're partway through more self-service, partway through more mobile payments, partway still needing lanes because some people just like the lanes. Yeah. And this is the thing. At the moment, there's so many changes and so many opportunities out there that, yes, we need to cater for everybody, which is, yes, sometimes, you know, you can handle the mass under one, but some people want to stand in their lane, get served, have a conversation with a cashier. Some people want to go self-service, scan two items and run off. Some people don't want to work, you know, they're in the garden center. They don't want to walk all the way to the other store to pay for it. They just want to pay for it there and then and move on. And I think that for me is we're in the middle of that.
I think that's a good point, Gordon, because a lot of the change we've seen, especially in the last couple of years, has been driven by the pandemic and the situation arising from that. And it's really interesting that, you know, at what point, how is technology driven forward? Well, technology advances at its fastest pace during times of challenge. Like the Second World War was a huge driver for technology. If it weren't for that, we wouldn't have, you know, it's a bit of a grim topic, but we wouldn't have nuclear power if it weren't for that. You can argue whether it's a good thing or a bad thing, certainly, but it's technological advancement. And I think to a certain degree, we've seen that over the last couple of years as well. And I think, you know, that comes down to, it's not just big things, you know, big global things, but it's also, you know, down to things like your local corner store. The change has affected that, and I think that a lot of that change is here to stay. And I think what will happen is we'll keep the things that have changed for the better, and do away with some of the old technology that's been replaced, while still keeping some of the existing technology that was there. What was there that still works, we keep it. But it's been great to see a lot of new technology coming through, and yeah, definitely interesting to talk about that today.
Definitely, you know, for me, it's sometimes simple things like customer displays. You know, the 2-line customer display versus a 10-inch color screen. Nowadays, you know, it's so easy to prove the fact of how many good use cases you can have for it, why you need it, that, you know, you're doing that easily, to be honest. Where the old technology is, you know.
Yeah, I think that's the most important, you know, people is really in the mood of change because they have been forced to change. So now they got used to change and they are now more willing to take new technologies.
It's easy to change when you have to, right?
Hey.
Yes. And if you don't have to change, why would you?
Human being is a human being. This is something that we cannot change. Yeah? That we can influence, but not change. So yeah, I think we have been discussing a few topics which are very, very important for our industry. Thank you very much indeed, Richard. Thank you very much, Gordon. Of course, we will be back with more information very soon. So thank you.
Thank you.
See you in our next podcast.
Cheers.